The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Rendell.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
We are in Washington awaiting the appearance of Robert Mueller to announce his final findings. Okay, there he is, Robert Mueller, looking even taller and thinner than usual. Let's go to him live.
Good morning.
Well, you've been praying so hard, and you've been waiting so long. You've been begging me for justice and to right this nation's wrong. Well, today those prayers are answered. It's with pleasure and excitement that I'm announcing my indictment. I hereby charge the president with being just the worst.
Okay, I'll go along with that.
Him for rigging an election in a conspiracy that still is underway. I'm indicting him for paying off a pornographic actress who could never screw as many men as he does every day. I'm indicting him for separating parents from their children and the civil rights protections he's reversed. But mostly I'm delighted to announce that he's indicted on 1,000 counts of being just the worst. Treachery and treason. Being treasonous is what he's all about. I'm indicting him for being so far up in Putin's rectum it would take a vodka enema to ever flush him out. I'm indicting him for looking like a syphilitic apricot with rotten scaly skin about to burst. He's the man you want to fire, but I'm preaching to the choir. He's the worst, 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 worst. She will indict him and impeach him and then sentence him to prison. Got a finger that'll teach him. Hallelujah, let the good news be dispersed. Mr. President, if I may be completely candid, you red and tiny in the act of being a lawyer by not complying, tricking out a dirty line, Russian spying, absolutely horrifying.
I'll add my amen to that as well. James Corden.
Corden. Sometimes, you know, I don't stay up that late at night to get to watch him, but I came across that little ditty online. James Corden, it is Robert Mueller's indictment song. Yeah, we'll have to bring that one out again when the next indictments come down. Pretty good. Trump is the worst. We can all agree on that. It's my quest to bring you something humorous to begin each day's show with. Some days easier than others, especially when all the late night hosts are on vacation. Go figure. Well, this coming Monday is Labor Day. So, you know, they take off this week and then they have the long weekend and then everyone goes back to work on Tuesday, which I believe is the 4th. Following my schedule of starting the week on Tuesday. And then it's technically fall, although fall doesn't begin until the end of September. It's still summer, as the temperatures will tell you. Welcome to a Thursday. We love Thursdays around here because Howie Klein joins us, and we have good news to talk with Howie about from yesterday. From Tuesday. But today is also August 30th. Now, I know August 30th may not mean a whole lot to you, but to me, It changed my life. 2 years ago today, I had surgery to remove the lung cancer, the two tumors that were growing in my lungs. It was pretty daunting when you think about it. I was diagnosed the end of June, in mid-July. Is that right? Yes. Finally diagnosed. We found that there was a mass on my lung in June, went through all the tests, right? Finally got the diagnosis, I think, on July 25th, that it was indeed lung cancer. And then there was all these other tests that I had to have before the surgery. My surgery was August 30th, 2016. So I was off the air yet 2 years already. It's amazing how time flies when our lives are being pummeled into the ground. I remember thinking, I was off the air for a couple of months after my surgery, and I couldn't wait to get back on the air, at least to talk a little bit before the election, because I was thinking I wanted to have a little fun at Donald Trump's expense, and not let the most important election of our lifetime go by without me being on the air. Once I got back, I got back on the air about 2 weeks before election time, never in a million years thinking we'd be here today. Really didn't. I thought, you know, I'd be one of those people just, you know, always bitched at by conservative Democrats for complaining too much about Hillary Clinton, because, you know, I would have been on her ass the entire time for things that I disagreed with, much like I did to Obama and every other president who's in office. So today, 2 years, I'm technically 2 years cancer free. I'm not considered cured until I hit the 5 year mark. Once I get to 5 years cancer free and I go in for regular CAT scans and, see my oncologist, once you pass the 5 year mark, they consider you, cured. And this is the only time they ever use that C word, the cure word, when it comes to cancer, is in a situation like mine, where the cancer was detected early enough that the entire thing was able to be removed via surgery, which was the case with me. They took out the entire lower lobe of my left lung, where the main tumor was, and they did what's called a wedge resection of the upper lobe of my left lung, where there was a second tumor unrelated to the first. Yes, I have to do things differently, you know. So at first, when the surgery ended, my surgeon told my husband that I was going to need chemo, because the thing they found in the upper lobe was a tumor, cancerous tumor. And he just thought it was a metastasis of the first. What the tests that they do on the cells found was that it was a completely separate and apart from the first one. So I had two instances of lung cancer growing in my body that weren't related. And they caught them both early enough that it was stage one, and they removed them both, without me having to undergo radiation or chemotherapy or any of those other nasty treatments. But as I said, at the beginning, they had me going in quarterly for a CAT scan. And then they moved it down to 3 times a year. Now we're at twice a year. And it will probably be twice a year until we hit that 5 year mark. That's if I still have insurance. One of the things we're going to talk to Howie Klein about today is Republicans are already promising their base that if they are able to retain the majorities in both the House and Senate, that as soon as the new Congress begins, they will once again bring back a bill to repeal Obamacare. Why? Well, because what has changed? John McCain. John McCain, the no vote that killed Trump's goal of, you know, taking away my health insurance, he was responsible for it. Now that John McCain is gone, the governor of Arizona, Doug Ducey, gets to replace him. And the only directive is that the replacement be of the same political party as the senator who died. So Doug Ducey has to, by law, appoint another Republican. Now, the question is, you know, there's some are saying, well, he's going to appoint Cindy McCain to, you know, to fill out the last 2 years of John McCain's term. This seat will come up for re-election again in 2020. And that she would ostensibly do the things that, you know, carry on what he wanted. But nothing tells Doug Ducey he has to do that. He can pick the most right-wing, crazy person who would vote against everything that John McCain voted for, or vote for the things he voted against, like the killing of Obamacare. So one more reason to make sure that the Democrats take back the House, and if possible, the Senate, too. We must change things. Right now, I have insurance this year. It's much shittier insurance than I had last year and the year before that, because they keep, you know, raising the prices. And with Trump trying to do away with the Affordable Care Act and doing away with the individual mandate, I know that the premiums, if they're still, if Obamacare is still in place next year, which it looks like it will be in some respect, they're trying to wipe out protections for people with pre-existing conditions. I have a pre-existing condition. I have the big one, the cancer. And in fact, I have three. I'm a three-time cancer survivor, if you really want to look into it. I've got the lung cancer. I had a malignant melanoma about 10 years ago. And I don't know if you can see this little thing on my nose, but I had a basal cell carcinoma right there. So, you know, if they can let insurance companies get away with not covering us for pre-existing conditions, you know they will. The other thing that's going to happen is this next year when you go to sign up for your health insurance, they will have the junk policies back on, because that is one thing that Trump got through. They can offer these crappy policies that don't cover anything, that are dirt cheap. And they're dirt cheap because they don't cover anything. I won't be buying one of those. So anyway, we still have a heavy lift ahead of us. We've got, what is it, like 78 days until Election Day? I'll tell you, at least once a week, you need to go online and check your voter registration and make sure it's still good. Even if you just voted in the primary, just get in the habit of once a week, you know, set a date and time, a day, or, you know, Mondays at 9 a.m., you check your local supervisor of elections website, you should be able to find your voter registration and make sure it's still good. You're right, Pisces Bobby in the chat room says being a woman is a pre-existing condition. That it is. If you've ever had a child, that's a pre-existing condition. If you've ever been the subject of domestic violence, that's a pre-existing condition. We did away with pre-existing conditions, and Trump wants to bring them back. I was here on the air during the whole fight, the ramp up to the Affordable Care Act, and never said it was perfect. Always lobbied for Medicare for All, but it was a good first step, and it saved my life. So I'll tell you, if it were not for Obamacare 2 years ago, I don't know what would have happened. I probably would not be here talking to you right now because I wouldn't have been able to afford insurance. and I wouldn't have had my cancer surgery paid for. So I'd either be, you know, living out of I was going to say my car, but I probably wouldn't have a car either. Things would be considerably worse than they are now. And things aren't too great in this household at the moment as it is. So there's a lot riding on the line. At the very, very least, if we want to save any semblance of the Affordable Care Act, the Democrats must retake the House in November. And if we want a chance at Medicare for All, which is the way this country is moving, then we need the Democrats to take back the Senate, too. I know that's going to be a heavier lift, but come on, let's give it all we've got. Okay? All right. So I'm living on borrowed time now. It's 2 years, and I feel fine. And my next CAT scan is in October, in case you were wondering. And now is a good time for me to remind you on this second anniversary of my surgery that if you ever smoked, I was a smoker. I smoked cigarettes when I was a kid. I mean a kid. I started when I was like 12. And I only quit when I worked. I was working in radio in Los Angeles. I worked on a big morning show, the Mark and Brian show. And while I was there, it was not Clear Channel. It was ABC, Disney ABC. They built us a new building. So when we moved from the old building into the new building, there was a no smoking rule in effect. In the old building, we smoked in the studio. And since both Mark and Brian smoked, it was hard to quit around that. Once we moved into the new studio, there was no smoking allowed in the building. So during commercial breaks, when I'd be running the board, they'd go outside to smoke. So that's when I quit. And that was, what, 1993, maybe? So I haven't smoked a cigarette since. Now I'm considered, you know, to have been a non-smoker because it's been so long. I say everyone should get checked anyway because a lot of people get lung cancer who have never smoked. We're around enough toxins in the airwaves that a lot of people develop lung cancer who never smoked themselves. So get a scan. Go find a program. There's all kinds of the American Cancer Society. They will refer you to a program. I forget the URL or something about a scan to save lives or something. But do it. It's worth the peace of mind. Okay? All right. It's Thursday. Howie Klein will be along in a little bit. But before we get to Howie, we got to get to what's news. And we'll do it live.
I read the news today.
Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, Florida's gubernatorial race turned ugly right out of the gate. The Trump-backed Republican candidate Ron DeSantis, using racial dog whistles in one of his first statements about his opponent, Andrew Gillum, who would be the state's first African-American governor if elected.
Well, look, I mean, this is Florida elections are always competitive. And, this is a guy who, although he's much too liberal for Florida, I think
he's got
huge problems with how he's governed Tallahassee.
No, he doesn't.
He is an articulate spokesman for those far-left views, and he's a charismatic candidate.
And charismatic.
I watched those Democrat debates. None of that was my cup of tea, but, I mean, he performed better than the other people there. So we've got to work hard to make sure that we continue Florida going in a good direction. Let's build off the success we've had on Governor Scott. The last thing we need to do is to monkey this up by trying to embrace a socialist agenda with huge tax increases bankrupting the state. That is not going to work. That's not going to be good for Florida. So I'm going to fight for what I believe in because I think I'm the guy who can really lead Florida in a good direction.
Fox News even saw the insanity in what DeSantis said, and actually apologized, sort of.
A little while ago, we had Ron DeSantis, the Republican nominee for governor in Florida, on for an interview to discuss the Florida election. During the interview, he made what some are calling an inappropriate comment about his Democratic opponent, Andrew Gillum. DeSantis has since clarified his comment in a statement saying, quote, Ron DeSantis was obviously talking about Florida not making the wrong decision to embrace the socialist policies that Andrew Gillum espouses.
Oh,
to characterize it as anything else is absurd. Florida's economy has been on the move for the last 8 years, and the last thing we need is a far-left Democrat trying to stop our success. We do not condone this language and wanted to make our viewers aware that he has since clarified his statement. Also, Mayor Gillum will be on with Shepard Smith today at 3 p.m.
Yeah, and Gillum did appear on Fox with Shepard Smith, and he called DeSantis out.
It was the monkey this up part. Sir, your response.
Yeah, that part wasn't lost on me. It's very clear that Mr. DeSantis is taking a page directly from the campaign manual of Donald Trump. But I think he's got another thing coming to him. If he thinks that in today's day and age, Florida voters are going to respond to that level of derision and division, they're sick of it. What we're trying to offer in this race
was
is
that
a
racist
North Star
or a
where
a
we want to go as a state.
Was that racist or a figment of speech?
Well,
figment of speech?
Well,
figure of speech. You meant.
In the handbook of Donald Trump, they no longer do whistle calls. They're now using full bullhorns.
And that was a bullhorn.
And what I've got to say about that we've got to make sure that we stay focused, I think, on the issues that confront everyday people. I'm not going to get down in the gutter with DeSantis and Trump. There's enough of that going on. I'm going to try and stay high and try to talk about what the North Star and the future is for the state of Florida and the people of this state. And I think that's what people want. They're just so sick of this divisive, derisive politics that have been coming out of Washington and has now infiltrated the politics of this state vis-a-vis Ron DeSantis. He's very clear on day one that he's willing to go down to the gutter. In our opinion, we're going to win this race because we're going to stay high and we're going to remind Floridians of what the true spirit of the American way is. And that's what I'm going to do as governor, help us reach that that high mark as a state so that we're a leader again and not a back of the pack state.
He is so good. I saw him a few times on TV yesterday and it just made me smile and a real genuine smile because we actually have a candidate for governor here in Florida that I want to vote for, that I'm excited about voting for, not just voting against the other guy, as has been every time I voted for governor in Florida. It's always been voting against the Republican because the Democrat was at least worse, you know, at least better than that Republican. This time, we have a great candidate. We have a chance to make a real difference. So if you're in Florida, you know what you got to do. It's phone banking. It's you know, knocking on doors. It's telling your friends and neighbors. It's donating money if you can. And we're going to need help from around the country, too. This is a big, big race, and mostly because Andrew Gillum is a true progressive. So we can wipe that veneer of, hey, there's too progressive for Florida, off of their faces. And, you know, everyone who says, well, to win in the Democratic Party, you need to be, you know, Republican light. No, you don't. We need to show them that what I've been saying all these years is true, that, you know, give us somebody we can get excited about, somebody whose policies we want, and we will come out and vote. So we got that going for us. In other news, White House counsel Don McGahn will step down from his role this fall. Trump made the announcement on Twitter and said McGahn's departure would take place shortly after the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. Then he wrote, hopefully, in parentheses, to the Supreme Court. According to the New York Times, Trump's tweet came as a surprise, especially to McGahn.
A top White House aide at the center of the Mueller probe, now on his way out.
Don McGahn's a really good guy. Been with me for a long time. Privately before this, he represented me. He's been here now. It'll be almost 2 years, and a lot of affection for Don.
Days after learning that White House counsel Don McGahn was interviewed by special counsel investigators for 30 hours, President Trump tweeting, McGahn will be leaving his position in the fall, shortly after the confirmation, hopefully, of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the United States Supreme Court. I've worked with Don for a long time and truly appreciate his service.
Any concern about what he said to the Mueller's?
No,
not at all.
I knew he was going also, you know, as you know. I had to approve it.
For 18 months, McGahn was a central figure in this White House's legal dramas.
I'm the one that has to walk into the Oval Office and advise the president on various recommendations.
McGahn, leading the effort to fill the federal bench with Trump-picked conservative nominees, spearheading the search for two Supreme Court picks, and navigating a slew of controversies.
My counsel came, Don McGahn, White House counsel, and he told me, and I asked him, And he can speak very well for himself. He said he doesn't
think better than you can.
Anything is wrong.
Trump enlisted McGahn in a failed effort to stop Attorney General Jeff Sessions from recusing himself from the Russia probe. And McGahn once refused Trump's order to direct the Justice Department to fire Mueller, according to a person familiar with the matter. These episodes catching the attention of the special counsel, who is investigating Russian meddling and possible obstruction of justice.
You're aware of
No, I don't have to be aware. We do everything straight. We do everything by the book. And Don is an excellent guy.
Also surprised by McGahn's departure, Senate Republicans. Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley, who worked with McGahn on judicial nominations, tweeting, "I hope it's not true." And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell lamenting the sad news for our country.
An independent analysis published Tuesday estimated that Hurricane Maria killed 2,975 people after it hit the island of Puerto Rico last September, up from the previous official death toll of 64. During a White House event Wednesday where the president was announcing a grant for drug-free communities, reporters asked about aid for Puerto Rico. And what does Trump do? He repeated his previous assessment that the federal government did a fantastic job in Puerto Rico. Yeah, right.
And don't forget, their electric plant was dead before the hurricane.
No.
If you look back on your records, you'll see that that plant was dead.
No.
It was shut. It was bankrupt. It was out of business. They owed tremendous amounts of money. They had it closed up. And then when the hurricane came, people said, what are we going to do about electricity? That wasn't really the hurricane. That was gone before the hurricane.
But
we've put a lot of money and a lot of effort into Puerto Rico.
Not enough.
And I think most of the people in Puerto Rico really appreciate what we've done.
Yeah, I don't think so. San Juan's mayor, Carmen Julian Cruz, spoke with MSNBC's Ali Velshi.
And don't forget, their electric plant was dead before the hurricane.
Oh, no.
If you look back.
Oh, no. Wait. Oh, I. Okay. I can't cue into it. Oh, man. Hold on. Let me see if I can fix this real fast. Oh, man. I got to get that clip. Oh, well, we're going to have to go.
Well, don't forget their electric.
You're going to have to hear Trump again. I'm sorry.
Hurricane. If you look back on your records, you'll see that that plant was dead. It was shut. It was bankrupt. It was out of business. They owed tremendous amounts of money. They had it closed up. And then when the hurricane came, people said, what are we going to do about electricity? That wasn't really the hurricane. That was gone before the hurricane. But we've put a lot of money and a lot of effort into Puerto Rico. And I think most of the people in Puerto Rico really appreciate.
No, they don't. Come on. Here's Carmen Yulon
Cruz.
So,
Mayor, this is an interesting point. There were issues with the electrical grid before the hurricane, but the president's implication that the electricity generation was not there before the hurricane, I think that's just entirely untrue.
It's a lie.
A lie.
He just simply is lying through his teeth. We had issues of generation, but, you know, this is what he's doing. He's trying to appease his own mind and his soul, if he has one, about this 2,975 deaths by saying, you know what? It is a fault of the people of Puerto Rico. No, we had electricity before Maria came. Maybe he doesn't know that Irma came 15 days before that and really hit us.
Yep.
Because, you know, he thought he was being so bright by telling us that we are an island surrounded by water, lots and lots of water, ocean
that.
Water. So what the president is doing is not only undignified, but it's unbecoming of the president of the United States. This is just like telling somebody that's gone through a fire that it's their fault, that they didn't run fast enough. No, it is your fault, Mr. President. You should shame on yourself and your administration. You led us here to die because you were more concerned about the political spin than about the human reality that we were dying. And now that number, 2,975, will follow him wherever he go for the rest of his life.
Yes, and we'll keep reminding him, won't we? And here we are in the middle of another hurricane season. And what they're saying is the recovery on Puerto Rico is so tenuous. If a Category 1 storm were to brush the island, it would be devastation. Donald Trump had a little gift today for all federal workers. While John McCain's, or the beginning of John McCain's memorial service in Phoenix was going on, Donald Trump canceled pay raises for most federal employees set to take effect in January, citing the budget. We just can't afford it. right? He can afford how many billions of dollars for the military? He can afford how much for the stupid F-35? He could afford how much did he want to pay for that ridiculous self-masturbatory parade he wanted to put on? But federal workers can't get a raise. So this cancels their raise for the new year, for 2019. Unbelievable. There's more, but it's time to break because Howie Klein's coming along. So we'll do that. We'll let's get Howie on the line, shall we? It means, oh, let me first do this.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal, and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Yay, it's Thursday. That means Howie Klein is here from Down With Tyranny and the Blue America Pack. And Howie Klein, we had good news in Florida.
Yes, we did. We had mixed news in Florida. We had the big one was really big, was really good news, and that, of course, was that Andrew Gillum won the Democratic nomination for governor. And
right.
That is really great.
That is great.
Andrew's an old friend. I've known him for two decades.
Wow.
And he's going to make a great governor if he wins this thing, and he has a good pathway to victory. So I'm really excited about that. I mean, it's going to be Andrew Gillum, who is sort of a mixture between Bernie and Hillary in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's his own man, obviously, but he endorsed Hillary in the presidential primary, and Bernie endorsed him in this election. So he sort of, you know, brought the two parts of the party together. That's how I'm hoping people see it. You know, there'll be some Bernie extremists, I think, you know, really, really extreme,
mm-hmm.
who are not satisfied. And there'll be some, you know, crazy Hillary bots who are, you know, just disgusting people anyway.
Yep.
And they will not accept it. But you know what I think, Nicole? I think like that, what I just described, those Hillary bots and that extremist Bernie faction of purists.
Yeah.
That's about 1%.
Right.
If that.
Right.
Probably less than 1%.
Mm-hmm.
And they make a lot of noise and they yell and scream, but it doesn't mean anything. And I think that Florida voters are going to, Democratic voters particularly, are going to look at Andrew and say, you know, that's really the best of Democrats. And, you know, Bernie likes him. He supported Hillary and he supports Bernie. And, you know, that and I think most Democrats are like that. I think most of the Democratic voters who were big Bernie supporters voted for Hillary in the general election. I'm not saying all did, but
no.
I think most did.
Most
and there were exceptions, of course, in some places. I know West Virginia was a big exception,
mm-hmm.
where there were lots and lots of Bernie supporters that just could not vote for Hillary. But that was a sort of a special case in a way.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know if that was the question you were asking me. I just got carried away.
No, but that's good. Look, I'm so excited about Andrew Gillum. And every time and he was all over the TV yesterday. And every time I hear him speak, I well up with pride. It's like it's been so long since I've had a candidate, you know, in a general election that I'm excited to vote for. I always seem to be voting against the Republican. But this
time, right.
this time there's.
You just, exactly what the Democratic Party establishment is all about.
That's right. They,
because they're trying to maintain this big tent, they don't want to offend, you know, these conservatives who identify for some reason as Democrats. So what they do is their policy is just literally their policy, conscious policy, is to maintain this lesser of two evils kind of strategy. They don't want to be too good, because if they're too good, they're going to alienate conservatives. And so they try not to do that. So they literally don't want to be too good. I mean, you look at the statistics on Medicare for All.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, something like 85% plus of Democrats,
yep,
favor Medicare for All. 71% of the general population favors Medicare for All. Even approximately 52% of Republicans are now favoring Medicare for All. So who doesn't? Republicans in Congress don't, and the DCCC and the DSCC, that's who doesn't favor it. So you get the Democratic establishment, the worst of the Democratic establishment, and then you get the Republican establishment. Well, the Republican establishment, they don't want it. The people of this country want it.
Right.
And yet the DCCC is going out and looking at candidates at who to recruit, and they're trying to recruit people who are against Medicare for All, and they look at people who are for Medicare for All, and they try to put a shiv in their backs and don't want to support them. Wait till they start allocating money. They're going to be giving all their money to people who are against Medicare for All, and they'll just not give any money to help people who are for Medicare for All. That's the DCCC. That's who the fuck they are. That's what the fuck they are. Pardon my language.
That's
I feel
fine.
Terrible. But I started getting worked up.
Yeah, no, it's...
I'm going to put myself down now.
but it's something to get worked up over. I was talking about, actually, you've got a post up at Down With Tyranny. The GOP wants to repeal Obamacare again. How will that play in November? And this is what it's come down to. They're openly saying, if they keep both chambers of Congress, that, you know, and now they'll have a replacement for John McCain, who would vote with the other Republicans, not the way John McCain voted,
the Republicans are going to call for a vote to
overturn Obamacare again. All the more reason why everyone needs to get out and vote.
Exactly. You know, something that I feel is really important that's been completely missed by the mainstream media, and I mean completely missed. I have even gone out of my way to contact some of my friends at the Washington Post and the New York Times, even at Huffington Post, to talk to them about something that they're all missing. I don't know why they're missing it. It's not that hard to see this. All you have to do is to go to the FEC Records of Contributions. Those come out very frequently, and you'll see something very odd. You'll see that a billionaire, I mean billionaire, mm-hmm, some multimillionaires, but mostly billionaires, conservatives, are donating inside Democratic primaries. So the way they do it is they give the money to No Labels, which is a really horrible, it's the worst, mm-hmm, of all the PACs.
Yep.
They try to say that they're, you know, moderate Republicans and moderate Democrats. They are the most right-wing Democrats. I mean, if you want to call Joe Lieberman a moderate,
yeah,
okay, that's what they are.
Right.
And they are, you know, they're against if you take one issue that defines who No Labels is, just one issue,
yeah,
this is what No Labels is. Let's compromise with the Republicans on Social Security.
Mm. Uh-huh.
That's what they are.
Right.
That sums them up in one phrase. They want to compromise on Social Security, meaning raise the age of retirement,
yep,
meaning people will get less benefits. That's who No Labels is. Anyway, that's also the richest of Republicans. That's their dream. They hate Social Security. They feel like they're being forced to pay for poor people's retirement. It's not true, but that's what they think. So they are opposed to it, and therefore they give large amounts of money to No Labels to go into this is new to go into Democratic primaries and fight against progressives. And you know, the first time I noticed it this cycle was in Chicago, where we had a really good progressive woman, Marie Newman,
mm-hmm,
going up against a horrible blue dog, Dan Lipinski.
Right.
And it looked, in the last month that she was, all the polling showed she was going to beat Lipinski. And that would have been amazing, you know, to have an outright progressive come in against a blue dog and just kick his ass. And I was thinking, that's just amazing. I was so happy and so excited. And then all of a sudden, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, massive, hundreds of thousands of dollars over, I think in the end it was over $1 million of money started coming in from these billionaire, mostly Republicans, but billionaire conservatives. It was pouring into No Labels. And No Labels just took the money and turned it right around into the worst smear campaign I had ever seen against Marie Newman.
Wow.
I mean, you would think she was like some kind of a streetwalker who had a record of like eating children. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And there was no one to say, well, that's not true. There was no one to call out their ads and say those ads are not true. And they just went wild on her. And in the end, it was close. But Lipinski beat her strictly because of these ads. And then I saw they were doing it over and over and over again. They just kept doing it in campaign after campaign.
Howie, all of a sudden you're breaking up on me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know why. I mean, it must be the what was that senator from Alaska call it? Never mind. Anyway, yeah, I don't know why. Am I still breaking up?
No, you're better now.
Okay. So anyway, they were on Tuesday. They managed to beat Alan Grayson.
Yep.
In favor of a very conservative Democrat named Darren Soto, who has openly, publicly said he will compromise on Social Security.
Amazing.
Who voted against Dodd-Frank.
Wow.
who voted to, well, you know, one thing after another, like, you know, doctors who perform abortions should go to jail or be tried for murder.
Oh, my God.
He voted for that twice.
Oh, my God.
He was an A from the NRA. And speaking of the NRA, their poster child in Arizona, Ann Kirkpatrick,
mm-hmm.
she won against what's his name, Hines. And Hines is a progressive. She's a conservative. And, you know, and again, it was the same thing. Hundreds of thousands of dollars at the last minute pouring in to disable the progressive in favor of the conservative. In Hines's case, the lie was they had two major lies. Hines is a practicing physician. In fact, every time I tried to speak to him during the campaign, I would get him with, hey, could you hold on for a second? I'm in the middle of an operation.
Oh my God.
I'll get right back to you. And, you know, he worked right in the last day, the day before the election. When I called him, he was at the hospital working.
Wow.
So here's a doctor who's in favor of Medicare for all, and this conservative candidate, Ann Kirkpatrick, who votes with the Republicans like constantly, and she about him that he's against health care. They're spending. You know, when you can spend millions of, in this case, hundreds of thousands of dollars over and over and over again in a cheap media market, people start to believe it. Or they say, well, when there's smoke, there's fire, this must be at least partially true. Well, it's not true at all. Here's a physician who's in favor of single payer, and here's a lying conservative Democrat with a Republican PAC behind her saying the opposite. Same thing with, she's most famous for one thing, that she was the NRA candidate.
Right.
Not only did she get an A from the NRA, not only did they endorse her in race after race after race, she went up against Obama. And on a radio show, I think it was a radio show, but certainly there's a video, I mean, an audio of it,
mm-hmm.
she's saying that she is going to protect Arizonans from Obama's wish to make semi-automatic weapons illegal.
Wow.
She's talking about it in terms of Arizona values. She's going to protect Arizona values, and she wasn't shy about it. And so what does she do? She goes out with an ad saying that it's, you know, again, with lots of money behind it from these Republicans, saying that Hines, who of course is for gun control,
mm-hmm.
saying that Hines is an NRA character.
Oh my
God. So this
God.
Is the kind of thing that they do. They just lie.
Yep.
And there's no one to call them out on their lies. And it's Republican money trying to prevent progressives from winning elections. Hines was up by 5 points in her poll. So Andrew Patrick took her own poll and found Hines up by 5 points. So what do? They just pour money into the district at the last minute to destroy him, which they did. And then what I'm looking at also, which is, even makes me more sick, Nicole, is that they are – what is the DCCC doing about this? All this Republican money coming into Democratic primaries, what are they doing? They're laughing. They love it because it's supporting the candidates that they like.
Oh, God.
They like Aaron Soto. Oh. They like Ann Kirkpatrick. Those are the candidates who they're in favor of. So having – you know, and when I'm saying – Republicans, I don't want you to think I'm exaggerating. How about the Murdoch family?
Yep.
How about them? They put $500,000 in against Grayson. $500,000.
Oh my God.
How do you fight that? And they have no, they don't care. I mean, it's not like they're running and they have to be careful about telling the truth. Mm-hmm. They just lie. They're just lying one lie after another. You know, today I got an email from a friend of mine who's running for lieutenant governor in Rhode Island. And, you know, and he's very, very upset about this because, again, you get these rich, rich Republicans. In this case, it's Stacey Schusterman. So Stacey Schusterman is the CEO of Samson Energy. And Samson Energy is a huge offshore drilling company for gas and oil. And all of a sudden, you know, the Rhode Island race is coming. It's going to, I don't know, a week or two away.
Yep.
And in drops $50,000 in this sort of, you know, we're talking about a lieutenant governor race.
Right.
We're not talking about a Senate race or a governor race. It's a lieutenant governor race. People aren't paying that much attention. And Aaron Regenberg is an outright progressive. He's in the state legislature, and he leads the progressive faction in the state legislature. And the other guy is Dan McKee, who, you know, one more tiny baby step to the right, and he's a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is as close as you could be to a Republican. You know, he is a Republican with a D next to his name, Dan McKee, the worst of the worst. And, you know, here you have the CEO of Samson Energy, $500,000, boom, right into the race. And, you know, Regenberg is not taking PAC money. Regenberg is collecting money the way Bernie-crats, like as he is, collect money from small donors. How do you fight back against a $50,000 last minute contribution that's just going to lie about you anyway? Terrible situation. That was this morning.
Wow.
So they just keep doing this. And the Democratic establishment, I was just going to say the Democratic establishment doesn't care. They do care. They love it. They absolutely love it.
You know, I wonder what their take is on Andrew Gillum. I mean, obviously he's progressive, so they don't like that. But they do want Florida. Are they going to back him or not?
Well, you know, again, the worst parts of the Democratic establishment, the worst of the worst, is
the
DCCC.
Right.
And very close behind them is the DSCC.
Right.
So those two do not – they don't care about what happens in gubernatorial races.
Nope.
It doesn't matter to them. So they have no say in this. They don't look at it. They don't think about it. So then you have the Democratic Governors Association, and then you have the DNC. So and then you've got this overriding kind of situation, which is kind of like parallel to the DNC of the people who have the biggest say in the Democratic Party. So there would be people like the Clintons, like Obama, the big time Democratic consultants and lobbyists. So those are the people sort of behind the scenes who pull the strings. And I don't know how they feel about Andrew. I have a feeling the Clintons probably like him because he did
right.
back her in the primary.
Mm-hmm.
I know Obama likes him. So, you know, I think there's kind of a mixed feeling. In a lot of these cases, you know, when I'm railing against the DCCC, I'm not really that much talking about the members of Congress who supposedly have the ultimate control. I'm talking about the staffers who run it day to day. Those staffers, they really have a lot of power. They're the conservatives. So, you know, people will say to me, "Why are you carrying on so much about the DCCC? Look at these people who are a part of it." And they'll say to me, they'll throw it in my face, "Look at Ted Lieu; he's a vice chair."
Mm-hmm.
Okay, true, he is the vice chair. But I'm not railing about people like that. I'm railing about these these staffers who work in the dark, who are under rocks, and they're the ones that are really, really conservative. They are, you know, again, they're only in the Democratic Party for the money. They're not real Democrats. They are completely transactional figures. And these, when I'm talking about the DCCC, these are the people I'm talking about, faceless, nameless people who are the epitome of corruption. They define corruption. They are what corruption is. And so what do I mean by that? This is what I mean. There's a revolving door at the DCCC. The Republicans got rid of this years ago, but the Democrats, of course, are too stupid to get rid of it. And this is how it works. So someone works at the DCCC, and they make a salary, and it's a good salary, but it's not going to make them into a millionaire. Mm-hmm. So they work at the DCCC for one or two cycles. And what they're doing is they're giving out money here and there. They're hiring all these consultants. They're forcing the candidate, the DCCC-endorsed candidates, they're forcing them to hire these consultants, mm-hmm. these consultants who are worth zero, less than zero, because zero means it's kind of neutral. But less than zero means they destroy campaigns, which is what they do. So the DCCC makes you hire these completely incompetent, horrible, deadly and deathly consultants. Mm-hmm. And then the next quarter, these horrible consultants come in and work at the DCCC, and the staffers go out and work in this revolving door situation. They become the consultants.
Wow.
The guys who came into the DCCC mm-hmm. are then in charge of the money, and they start throwing the money that way. And everybody winds up, you know, over several cycles, everybody winds up a millionaire suddenly. So that's what I mean by corruption. That is what corruption is,
yep.
and that is what the DCCC is. People don't understand it, but that is what the DCCC is, this revolving door of absolute corruption. And, you know, some of them are liberals on some level, but the ones that I keep coming in touch with, the ones who I see making recruiting decisions and spending decisions, they're conservatives.
Right.
They come out of working for in conservative campaigns for conservative Democrats. They're a bunch of blue dogs and new Dems. And that's the world that these people are in. And it's overwhelmingly people like that.
And this
I got off a rant. I'm in a ranting and raving mood today.
That's okay. And this is why we always tell people, don't donate to the DCCC, to the DNC, to those organizations. Either donate directly to the candidate. You can do that through Blue America, or you can go to a place like Blue America and split it between all the endorsed candidates, and know full well that the money is going to go to the candidates and not to the party.
100% to the candidate.
Right.
No rake off. Not a penny. Not one single cent. Everything that you give to the candidates want to win.
Yep.
They don't want to rake off money.
Nope.
The DCCC. If you give money through the DCCC, that means I don't know the percentage. I wanted to say most of it, and it may be most of it, but a very, very significant percentage of the money that you contribute goes right down the toilet. You could take your money and throw it in a sewer
mm-hmm.
because the money, the candidates don't see most of that money. It goes to consultants. It goes to overhead. It's stolen. That's what happens with DCCC and DSCC money. Don't give it through them. If you like a candidate, give it to the candidate directly. The candidate will spend every cent of it. They know how to. The DCCC has no idea how to spend money.
Yep.
That's why they lose all the time, because they don't know how to spend money. They lose and lose and lose and lose because they have no idea. And most of that money goes into people's pockets who make it worse. They make it, and I'm not talking about Nancy Pelosi
uh-huh.
or Ben Ray Lujan stealing the money. That isn't what's happening. Now, in the case of Steve Israel, is another situation, because his wife says he was stealing the money.
Ooh.
I still haven't been able to find out exactly how that worked, but his wife is an alcoholic, and she went out and would tell people all the time that he's stealing money from the DCCC. I still haven't figured out how that happens.
Wow.
But the staffers have figured out how to steal the money. They are the ones who are stealing. And, you know, they do that, again, with what I was just saying, by giving inordinately large sums of money to people who lose. You know, why not have a situation, hey, if you win the race, you're going to make some money. If you lose the race, you ain't getting
uh-huh.
shit.
Right. Yeah.
Do that. No.
That would
they just
be...
give law. I mean, I'm talking about really big sums of money.
Right.
When you donate to a candidate, the candidate is going to spend the money to make himself or herself win. Just give to the candidate.
Right.
The DCCC, they will steal half the money.
Yep.
That's what happens there. You won't get that money. It's some rich consultant will get that money. Just don't give to them.
Right. And going back to...
Even if you're a
conservative Democrat. Give money to a conservative Democrat. Mm-hmm. Don't give it to the DCCC. They don't know what to do with
it.
No,
they don't. You know, there's a, here in Florida, Florida's a very expensive state to run a statewide campaign in because there's something like 11 media markets. It's ridiculous because it's so spread out. And I was looking at the money spent by the candidates here in Florida. TV, Philip Levine was the first up on TV by months. He spent $37.5 million or thereabouts. Jeff Green... Jeff Green spent the second most at $34.5 million. Then Gwen Graham, she spent about $16 to $17 million. And they were all over the TV, those three. And Andrew Gillum, I think I saw two TV spots the entire campaign. He spent $6 million. That's all he had. So obviously he's connecting with people. It's not about the TV time. The way that they, you know, the establishment politicos tell you you have to do it and spend so much money on TV ads and stuff. We're learning that's not necessary.
But you know why they want TV ads going up?
Yeah, because they get a cut of it.
Exactly. That's exactly the reason. They get a cut of it. And the more they spend on TV, the richer they get. And the more they spend on the most ineffective, stupid TV on NBC and ABC and CBS, where people are not getting their news anymore.
Yep.
I have a post going up tomorrow that says where people get their news from.
Yeah.
And it's not the newspapers where they put ads.
No.
And it's not the national networks where they put ads. That isn't it anymore. But that's where they get their biggest cuts of the money. That's where they line their pockets. And they don't care about the candidate. They don't care at all about the candidate, not even a tiniest little bit. They don't know the candidate. It's just another number.
Mm-hmm.
They come in. They, whether they win or lose doesn't make any difference. And next cycle, there's more candidates coming in. They do not care. And that's all they care about is, how do I make the most money? It is so dangerous. That's the first thing I tell candidates, that – the downside of the DCCC liking you is they're going to force you, or they'll try to force you, to hire people who will destroy you.
Right.
They will hire, they'll force you to hire people who will get their hands on your money and spend it for their own benefit, not for your benefit. That's the downside of the DCCC endorsing somebody or putting them on their red to blue program. And some people who I speak to pay attention and understand, and they get other people to confirm that for them, and other people just say, oh, you're crazy, and they ignore it.
Wow.
And then they always lose those candidates.
Then they learn by going through the campaign.
They learn, right? Yes.
Unbelievable.
You know, and that's one of the good things about Andrew. I mean, the way I met Andrew, by the way, is that he was the head for many, many years of young elected officials. So young elected officials is part of People for the American Way.
Ah.
And that's why I've known him for so long,
mm-hmm.
because he was the main guy. He really was the founder of that organization and ran it year after year after year, where they would be training, you know, people who would eventually wind up as being on the city council, mayors like himself, on the state legislature. And now we're starting to get presidents, and in his case, a governor. And I didn't mean presidents, I'm sorry, members of Congress,
mm-hmm.
and in his case, a governor who comes from that training, and they understand these things. They know exactly what this means. And we've got some great people. I mean, do you remember when the Democrats in the Wisconsin State Senate walked out rather
oh, yeah.
than be part of a vote for
sure
destroying unions in that
yep.
state? The person who led that was Chris Larson.
Right.
He was the head of the he was the minority leader of the state Senate. He was one of the leaders of young elected officials. He and Andrew are very close.
Wow.
And you have that network now all over the country, and it's fantastic. And this year there were some of the best candidates who won, like Rashida Tlaib in Detroit is another
mm-hmm.
one that comes out of that. And Ilhan, what's her name again? Ilhan in Minneapolis, Ilhan Omar, I'm sorry. She just took the open seat in Minneapolis that
Keith
mind.
Ellison.
That
Keith Ellison.
Yes, Keith Ellison left.
Yes.
To become
Attorney General. To,
and they're both of them are also from young elected officials.
Wow.
So it's a really good thing, and that these people know that you can't pull the wool over their eyes. You know, no one is going to go in and try to tell Andrew Gillum
that we need to put all your money on TV. It ain't
right.
going to happen.
Oh, no. And he's, oh, no. Because he did it without TV. This is going to be an interesting general election here, because it's already getting ugly. And it's pitting a real right-wing nut job against a true progressive. So I know a lot of eyes are going to be on Florida. Howie Klein, with that, we're just out of time again. Our time together seems to fly by.
We only got to talk about one thing. Didn't we have a list of like four or five
yes.
things?
We'll have to pick up.
I wanted to talk about Beto O'Rourke's band and Kara Eastman's band.
Okay, well, I'm going to write that down for next week. Thank you, Howie Klein. I'll talk to you then.
Bye-bye, Nicole.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And tomorrow on the program, Will Bunch, if you follow Will Bunch on Twitter, he wrote a thread about August 28th, 1968. We just passed the 50th anniversary. You'll want to hear his story.